Well, hey, what's going on? Happy Wednesday. Nick Kirby here. Welcome to Chatterbox Reds, proudly sponsored by DSC Commodities. Coming up in just a bit, myself and Chuck Walter from Chatterbox Reds Live on YouTube. But first, let's recap Reds Brewers from Tuesday night, this game two of the four-game series. Frankie Montas struggled a bit for the first time in a Cincinnati Reds uniform. He gave up three runs in the third inning and then two more unearned runs in the fifth. He had a potential double play in the fifth inning, but a less than perfect throw from Ellie De La Cruz and an even worse attempt at a catch by second baseman Jonathan India really put the Reds behind the eight ball. Montas's final line, five innings pitch, six hits, five runs, three earned runs, one walk, and four strikeouts. Carson Spires came in to eat some innings, and he did just that. He threw 81 pitches and got the Reds through four innings without having to turn to another reliever. Fortunately, he did allow three runs in the process, but nonetheless, he did save the Reds' bullpen. Reds' offense had 10 hard-hit balls off Brewers starter Joe Ross, but only had two runs to show for it. Reds did try to make a late rally, and they actually did end up getting the tying run into the on-deck circle in the ninth inning, but they would end up falling 9-5. Reds fall to 6-5 on the season. And for Brewers starting pitcher Joe Ross, this was his first big league win since June 29th, 2021. Here's what Frankie Montas had to say after the game.
To be honest, if I can take anything away from tonight, it was the need of walk in the third inning. You know, I think that was what started like everything. Got myself in trouble, giving somebody a free pass, you know. And I mean, I have to give him some credit too. You know, I feel like I made good pitches too, and they were on it, especially on my splitter. You know, they were taking a lot of my splitters, good splitters too. So got to give him some credit now. But besides anything, I feel like I made good pitches. You know, I was throwing my fastball, throwing my splitter, you know, throwing my sinker. Probably should have done a better job of getting ahead of the count, you know, two on strike one, you know, strike two. I was a lot of the guys were, you know, ball one, ball two, then I have to throw a strike, some of that. But I feel like I did a really good job getting to two strikes. Wasn't really affected trying to pull guys away.
And here's Red skipper David Bell.
Yeah, we know he can hit. He definitely can hit. It's a really good lineup, scrappy lineup. Like I said, I mean, they make it tough on you because you have to throw strikes, and they don't chase a lot, so they don't give you anything. You know, they really compete. Of course, the middle of the order are the guys that you know, we've all seen for years, and do a great job. And Yelich is right in the middle of that mix for sure. He can hit, but their whole lineup is, you know, it takes everything we have. So we're looking forward to continuing to compete against this team, and we respect them a lot.
Well, no home runs for the Reds on Tuesday night, but our deep drive of the game will just be that Christian Encarnacion Strand had two hits and three hard hit balls on Tuesday night. A real positive to take away from an otherwise forgettable night at the ballpark. Hopefully this can be the start of a good stretch from Christian Encarnacion Strand. And our deep drive of the game, sponsored as always by DSC. Deep South Commodities is a leader in renewable commodities for biofuel production. They specialize in used cooking oil collection, aggregation, and sales. Visit www.deepsouthcommodities.com for more information. Thanks as always to our friends at DSC. All right, let's check on some scores around the NL Central. Start off with the Pirates. They lost 5-3 to the Tigers. Actually had a blown save by David Bednar as the Pirates gave up four runs in the ninth inning. Cardinals, they beat the Phillies 3-0. Sonny Gray had a strong debut in a Cardinals uniform. And then the Cubs beat the Padres 5-1. So the Pirates sit at 9-3, Brewers 7-3. Cubs 7-4, Reds 6-5, and the Cardinals at 6-6. All right, well, here's myself and Chuck Walter. Chuck filling in for Trace, as he'll do from time to time this season. This is on Chatterbox Reds Live on YouTube.
All right, Chuck Walter, Nick Kirby with you. Final score out of Great American Ballpark. Brewers improved to 7-3. They score 9. Cincinnati falls to 6-5 on the season. They score 5 in the game. I want your opening thought on this, Curbs. Entering today, the Reds, 15th in hitting, 16th in pitching, 25th in fielding. You look at those numbers, statistically, I know you love the stats, Kirby, Poindexter. Statistically, we're looking at an average baseball team. Which of those three will the Reds, by season's end or in the next few weeks or in the next few months, turn it around to where they will not be average and be better than average in one of those statistics? Or are we looking at an average baseball team that right now is slightly above average at 6-5? Welcome, my friend.
Good to have you, Chuck. A little better than last week. We're still 0-2, but last week was really rough. So this was only like a slightly rough one. So I think we're having some progress, some positivity there. The pitching, no question about it. I think that this team, and I've said it a million times, so I apologize to those that have heard me say this over and over, but the Reds pitching, I think, is going to wear down a lot of teams in baseball because the Reds have a lot more depth. So while it may not, in the month of April, really wow you, like they may be middle of the pack in ERA, the Reds aren't going to have to dip into a lot of the guys, quite frankly, they dipped into last year. They're not going to need starts out of guys like with all due respect, Brett Kennedy or those type of pitchers, the guys they get out of independent ball, because they have more quality arms like Carson Spires tonight. He's a guy that the Reds just have at their disposal at any point. So I think when you get into July and August, that's when the Reds are going to wear down some of the teams like the Cardinals that have nowhere even close to the amount of pitching depth that the Reds have.
Let's take a big positive away. One, the Brewers have killed the Reds for years. They've been a kryptonite, it's felt like. They took 6-7 last year at Great American Ballpark. The big positive entering tomorrow's game and entering the upcoming series is that they got a pretty fresh bullpen, right? Frankie Montas, not his best game whatsoever. He goes 5-4 innings from Spires, who just got shelled but kept throwing pitches. I think the final tally was up near 80. It was, you get a hit, and you get a hit, and you get an extra base hit, and everyone was getting hits. It was a merry-go-round on the base path, but at the end of the day, Spires, I mean, I know that his runs were kind of the difference in the game, but take away that, take away the facts, and you'll take it from Spires to at least eat up some innings.
I'm never going to really be too critical of a guy's line when he throws 81 pitches out of the bullpen. I think that really whatever you do, you get a pass on when you go over 50 pitches as a reliever, because you're just in there to eat innings. And that was his main job. The Reds were out of the game, you know, when he came in. So look, I think he's a nice arm. I don't think he's a guy you want to have in your starting rotation, but he's a guy that you can mix and match. I think he kind of fills the Ben Lively role for the Reds last year. And the Ben Lively role, actually, I think, ended up being a really valuable role for the Reds deep into the season.
For years, we've been talking about Reds killers. I've been talking about Reds killers. I don't know if you have personally, Kirby, but Bill Hall and Lance Berkman and Albert and Eckstein and Roy Oswalt and the entire Boston Red Sox team from the year like 2003 to 2020, it felt like, Kyle Schwarber, Ian Happ, the list goes on and on of players that just wake up against Cincinnati. Christian Yelich kills a lot of different teams, but against the Redlegs, 78 RBI in 118 games against the Reds. I want your honest opinion here. When Yelich kind of went down a not great path playing baseball years ago, to where it seemed like he was right around that ripe age of when players fall off for a season or two and never really come back. And you say, oh, it was just age. You know, he hit 32, 33 and was never the same player. Did you think that he could get back to this point? And what is it about him that makes him so damn good at the plate?
I did not. I mean, I thought in 2021, I think that was the year he really dipped down. I thought that was probably the beginning of their end, but to his credit, he has bounced back. I still would not want to have his contract if I was the Milwaukee Brewers. He's still got, like, I think 4 or 5 years left, like 20-something million
right
a year.
Right now.
He's 32. He was good. He was pretty good last year, but I still don't think he's at the production level that you would want out of that kind of contract. So I don't know. We'll see. They're also having to DH him a lot now, so he's not really giving them any value in the field either. I think his defensive numbers have fallen off quite a bit. The last 2 years have actually been pretty rough whenever they have put him out in the field. So that has declined quite a bit. But I probably should save any Christian Yelich slander for at least two more days until we get to the end of this series.
Good and the bad, Kirby. Let's start with the bad from me. The good is, obviously, we'll get into Ellie De La Cruz. He looks fantastic once more today. The other good is watching on TV, not in Cincinnati currently. Can't wait to get to some games this summer, but just hearing Joe Z's voice. Now batting for the Reds. You know, I mean, you can hear it on the Game Time app. It's like, Reds fans, pucker up. It's time for the Kiss Cam. But the bad, man. Joe Z, the good. Ellie De La Cruz, the good. The bad, the Cincinnati Reds bullpen consistently. When is the last time, and this is another stump to Kirby, I got you last time with the trade from the Montreal Expos to the Cleveland Indians or Cleveland Guardians, where you did not know that it was Grady Sizemore that was in that trade. But here's a little stump to Kirby for you. When is the last time you think the Reds have had a top 13 bullpen ERA in baseball?
That's a good one. Does 2020 count?
No, and they weren't there anyways.
They weren't there in 2020. Okay.
Just throw out a year.
Maybe 2015?
2015, close. It was 2013. So we're talking over a decade of consistently mediocre bullpens. And I know that they make some moves. I know that over the years we've gone with the Coco Corderos. We've, you know, brought in Aroldis Chapman. We brought in Ryan Madsen, who never pitched a game for the Reds. We went with Strope. They bring in this year Suter and some other guys. So they've at least made a little bit of an effort. But it's like putting Flex Seal on the Titanic, man. How is it that every single year, consistently, the only constants in Cincinnati are Cheese Conies, Geta, and a god-awful bullpen? I mean, it's atrocious. At some point, you think in the offseason, they'll be like, you know what? Our bullpen sucks year after year. It's been between 15 and 30 for two decades now. Maybe we should go out there and get some arms for the back end of the bullpen. And once again, I'm just feeling like it's going to be a roller coaster ride of a season for the Reds. They're going to blow a lot of leads again, man. And I know today they didn't have the chance to blow any leads because they were down from the get-go. But do you see that same thing that I see? And how do we go about getting some dudes in the bullpen?
I think the Reds bullpen's pretty good. I think there was some that maybe went a little overboard and thought it was
going to be... You're a numbers guy, Kirby. Pretty good. It's mediocre at best. Year after year after year, we know this. They never have a good bullpen.
The bullpen last year was pretty good for the first 3 or 4 months of the year. They got absolutely torched in September, but the bullpen was the strength of the team for a large portion of the year. And I think that, I mean, the Reds, they had a lot of games where they were using openers last year. And I think some of the numbers got skewed. I think if you look individually, pitcher by pitcher, I think you could feel a lot better about the bullpen than if you just look at the total numbers. I mean, last year, you had Alexis Diaz, who was absolutely great until September. I don't know. Let me pull him up here. I mean, you had Alexis Diaz, a 3.07 ERA. Jabot was 3.33. Lucas Sims was 3.10. Alex Young was sub-4. Derek Law was 3.60. They had a lot of quality. Sam Moll had a 0.73 ERA. So they had, I mean, about four or five guys that had really good years. And they have built the bullpen up a little bit more this year, adding Emilio Pagan and some other guys. So I think the bullpen overall is pretty solid. And so what was the number of the top, you said top 13?
Top 13. I'm not even asking for top 10. I'm just asking for a top 15. A
They're
going to
do it.
Bullpen.
They're going to do it this year.
They'll be mediocre. Yeah.
They're going to do it
mediocre.
This year.
But I mean, Texas is a rare occasion last year where a team overcame a pretty bad bullpen to an average bullpen and won. But you look consistently at the teams that have won the World Series or competed for World Series championships the last 20 years, and they all have one thing in common. It's like the offensive line in football. You don't talk about it, but good teams win in the trenches. Good teams finish out games. They have great bullpens. I don't know, man. At a certain point, it just feels like a constant, and I know that the bullpen didn't do much today. Aside from Spires, he was the only guy that came out of the pen, went four innings, gave up, what, four runs in the game. So again, not the greatest numbers in the world right there. Three earned runs, but that is over 81 pitches. So you'll take that from Spires in his four innings. But it just seems like it's a phenomenon that I can't really explain. Since I was a young boy going to Synergy Field, sneaking down from the red seats to the blue seats, sprinting past ushers, doing spin moves, I've consistently seen the bullpen doors swing open, Todd Coffey sprinting out to get shelled, and it always feels cheap. It always feels like they just slapped this thing together, and that's pretty disrespectful to a bullpen that, you're right, did pitch pretty well last year, and statistically maybe on line to be pretty good this year. But it feels that way to me. Like, I never trust the Reds bullpen, and I'm not the only one. I see people in the chat saying, preach.
Yeah, I would encourage you to look through individually last year, and not just the total number. I mean, you look at the guys that had some. There's some enormous ERAs out of some of the relievers, like Eduardo Salazar had an ERA of 8. He's not even in the Reds organization anymore. Reaver San Martin was over 7. The list goes on. There's tons of guys that are not going to pitch this year. And to the Reds' credit, they did pay $8 million for Emilio Pagan as a reliever this year, which is not common for the Reds. They also went and got Brent Suter. I know he was a little bit, he was a cheaper option, but they did put a lot more effort into this bullpen than they have in years past. But even having said that, the best relievers are actually still guys on their first rookie contract. So, but I think this is the year. I get the frustration because it does feel like the Reds have made the bullpen a back burner
for decades.
For the last decade. But I would caution you that you don't also want to go too far on a bullpen, because there's a lot of teams, and you can look through team after team after team that tried to just buy free agent relievers, and I don't think that's a good strategy at all. A team that always comes to mind is the Colorado Rockies. There was one year they literally threw like $80 million at three relievers, and they all ended up sucking. They all were terrible because relievers are volatile. So for the Reds, I don't think it's necessarily as much about spending a ton of money in free agency on your bullpen. It's about drafting and developing quality relievers, and the Brewers are the perfect example. They have one of the world's cheapest bullpens. If you look at their salary year after year after year, they're probably one of the cheapest bullpens by salary, but they just keep pumping out guys, and then they can even trade a guy like Josh Hader when he gets towards the end of his contract because the guys behind them are good. And I think the Reds are trending that way. We've seen a lot of pitchers come up recently that have really, really nasty stuff, and I hope that continues to be a trend, because that's, I think, how the Reds have to make their bullpen. All right, two more chances to catch the Reds while they're in town on Wednesday and Thursday to finish off this homestand against the Brewers. And if you're looking for tickets, there's no better way to do it than with the Game Time app. The Game Time app is now an authorized ticket marketplace of Major League Baseball, which makes getting tickets even faster and easier. Prices on the Game Time app actually go down the closer that it gets to first pitch. With killer last-minute deals, all-in pricing, views from your seat, and the lowest price guaranteed, Game Time takes the guesswork out of buying MLB tickets. My personal favorite feature of the Game Time app is their seat layout. It shows you exactly the price all around the stadium in each section in a very clean, user-friendly way. And they also have all-in pricing. You can toggle this feature up at the top, and it shows you the total up front with no surprise fees at checkout. The lowest price guarantee or the Game Time app will credit you 110% of the difference. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use the code CINCY for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account, redeem the code CINCY, C-I-N-C-Y, for $20 off your first purchase. It's as easy as that. Download the Game Time app. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed.
I've been holding in that bullpen rant for about 5 years now, so I had to get it out. The real bad, not the bullpen, it's Jamer Candelario, not off to a good start. You're hopeful that a guy that's been in the majors for years, that hit at every stop of the minor leagues, that was a pretty good prospect, that has a track record of being good, figuring it out, and quite frankly, being a little bit streaky, like you saw last year when he was so hot with the Cubs out of the gate, and then just fizzled down the stretch. But you hope that a really tough start is going to turn around for Jamer. That's my bad. What's your bad before we get into the good from today?
The defense is the bad. I mean, it wasn't as bad today.
Easy.
I mean,
that's an easy
I do
one.
Think that, yeah, the defense was my biggest concern coming into the year after you lost McLean and Friedel. I think it's definitely a concern with this team. I'm not as concerned individually. I think Ellie De La Cruz is going to be fine defensively. I think he had a bad couple weeks and it got magnified because it's right at the beginning of the year. But the Reds have subpar defenders at 6-7 positions on most nights. And, that's tough. I do think that's something the Reds have worked hard to address. With guys like Matt McLean and like DJ Fredo and like Noel V. Marte, and behind them like Edwin Arroyo. And if you look at the Dayton Dragons roster, they have a ton of athletes that I think are going to be good defenders. But the Reds, they didn't prioritize defense for too long. It has caught up with them, I think, a lot in recent years. But I hope that's something that they do continue to improve upon.
We're hearing from the chat, Jamer Moustakas. That's terrifying right there. Haven't seen it yet, but equally as bad would be a Shogo Candelario. That one would be tough, too. We've seen some deals go through in previous years that have not been good, but every player is different. Every year is different. We're just getting started. Like Nick Kirby says, his rule of thumb, I asked him when he would start to get scared that Christian Encarnacion Strand has yet to walk in 11 games, has struck out a boatload, and has an OPS below 400, I believe. And his answer was what it is every year. Every year since Nick Kirby was a young lad back in 2001, he's been saying, we don't panic until May. He's like John Rothstein, you know? John Rothstein goes to sleep in May. Nick Kirby wakes up in May, shoots his eyes open, and makes sure that he has quality control at that point. But no worries from you there. The good from me is Ellie De La Cruz. He's just fine. Last week, we're talking about the sky falling down. There were people in the chat room and on Twitter seriously saying Ellie De La Cruz needs to go to AAA. The man's in the midst of a pretty nice hit streak right now. I say you get him out of the damn six hole. He would have batted at the end of this game had he just been in the 1, 2, or 3 hole. Or even for that matter, the 4 hole. Get him out of the 6 hole. The 6 hole's for the scrubs. Not the scrubs, but it's been this way for a long time. And for whatever reason, they've changed it analytically over the years. But your top 4 hitters are usually your dudes. 5 can hit as well. And then 6 through 9, it's the guys that, you know, typically don't hit as well. Why have they switched that over the years to where we now are seeing Spencer Steer hitting 7th and De La Cruz hitting 6th? And I get it. You mix up the innings, you get 6, 7, 8 coming up to start a little rally. I'm a traditionalist. Don't change it. Don't change what works.
Well, David Bell is very set in setting a lineup and keeping it. And he was not like that when he started. And for whatever reason, I don't know if he just decided that it was too much on players to be moving them around in lineup, and he's stuck with the lineup. There's really two ways that a manager can go about it. You can have the Joel Maddon where you just literally – you have a different lineup every night, or you have a more traditional where you just try to keep a lineup set. I prefer the Maddon style. I prefer, you know, moving guys up and down and not putting guys in set spots and trying to get the optimal lineup out there, you know, based on not just right left splits, but based on different pitchers' pitch mixes and all that. But if you're a guy that has a set lineup like David Bell, I think you got to stick with it longer than this. I think he has Ellie De La Cruz 6 because he's trying to get him comfortable, just like he did with Will Benson last year. I mean, Will Benson, to the dismay of a lot of this fan base, batted 8th and 9th almost the entire year because David Bell wanted to get him comfortable. Whether you think that helped Will Benson or not, I mean, it's hard to argue that Will Benson is not a better player right now than he was last year. So I think that's why. Spencer Steer is probably the one that does need moved up. I know I get crushed on this. I do think people overrate Spencer Steer a little bit in how good of a hitter he is against right-handed pitching. I think he's probably a slightly above average hitter against right-handed pitching, which is why you see him batting 6th, 2nd against lefties and 7th against righties. But, I mean, I don't think Spencer Steer is going to matter where you put him in the lineup. I think he's going to produce just about anywhere. But I think they also have Steer behind Ellie to try to give him some protection as well. So, I don't know. I'm not a guy that really gets too upset about lineups just because any study you look at, it doesn't really increase your runs at the end of the year all that much. So if David Bell thinks that Ellie's more comfortable sixth, I'm fine with that. It doesn't really bother me.
Ellie forces Milwaukee's only error in the game as they have to rush a throw because it's Ellie and he's the fastest dude in baseball. Is that factually correct, fastest dude in baseball, or are we looking at potentially someone else that has wheels but isn't really a good player?
I believe he was the fastest last year. Bubba Thompson's was fifth, I think. So they're right there neck and neck.
But he got on base a couple more times today, had an RBI. De La Cruz ups his average to .293 on the season, his OPS right near 1,000. It's early, but no worries about Ellie for me. I will say this. Last year, around the All-Star break, 2023 All-Star break, Ellie De La Cruz was right around the Kyle Schwarber 28th percentile range when it came to striking out batters. I don't know if you saw this on MLB Network. Since the All-Star break last year, he's in Joey Gallo territory. I mean, no one's striking out more than Ellie De La Cruz. We all know that. All he needs to do is put the bat on the ball, whether it's from rocket shots off the bat because he improves his plate discipline or just take some walks, whatever it is. He doesn't even need to put the bat on the ball. He just needs to not strike out. Do anything but strike out, and he's putting so much pressure on the defense, man. It is fun to watch. Did it again today. But De La Cruz, a bright spot for the Cincinnati Reds. I want to pivot over to TJ Antone, who's on a mission right now to have a Disney movie made about him. When everyone saw him walking off the field, what was it, Saturday, Sunday, whichever day it was, getting the days mixed up too. Factually, just I'm all over the place. Who cares? I don't care about facts. Not a facts podcast. Kirby gives the facts. I just run us through. Antone goes down, and as he's walking off the mound, we all felt like the inevitable was coming. You know, that's a career. Antone, he just can't stay healthy. Good pitcher. Showed a lot of flash back in 2021, but for whatever reason, the game has not been kind to him. He's on a mission right now. He said, I think I have an opportunity and responsibility to do this not only for myself, but for other kids out there dealing with Tommy John. The cool thing about baseball is that contracts are guaranteed. There's kids out there in high school and college, their careers are over, and they just don't have the best medical attention in the world. I think I have an opportunity to be the person that makes it back from there. I know I have the perseverance. I know I have the work ethic. And with them, mixed with the medical experts that are around, why not me? He says he's going to go out there, and when he comes back, he's going to plan on throwing hard again, not switching up his game. He's going to try to be the pitcher that he was in 2021. And he said, guess what? If it doesn't work, if there's a setback, whatever it may be, we'll hang it up, but I'm not going down without a fight. How can you not love TJ Antone?
Yeah, that's pretty cool stuff. I can't even believe he's not just calling it right there. I mean, after the tough luck that he's had over the last couple of years, he's a hell of a competitor. I know I said it the other night, but I think he's got a great career after baseball ends. I think he's going to be a guy that teams are going to want to be around their young players. And obviously he's already kind of starting that coach's mentality right now. So whether TJ Antone's a pitching coach or a minor league coordinator or hell, maybe even a big league manager, I think he's the kind of guy that has a bright future after his playing career is over for sure.
I was talking about this the other day, and I know it's completely off the beaten path right now of what we're talking about on the J-Bar, but we did get into a little bit of Ellie De La Cruz and how he needs to work on the plate discipline, because all that separates Ellie De La Cruz from being the face of baseball, really, is the ability to put the ball on the bat on the ball. And it's not even, quite frankly, mechanics, which a lot of young people struggle with. Like, his mechanics, his footwork, you know, getting the drive off his back foot, everything's there. Like, I feel like all he needs to do is take more pitches and have someone come in that mentors him and teaches him a little bit about the strike zone. I think that person, Joey Votto, I'm sure at some point that's been brought up many a times on this broadcast that Votto, who came in and saved, quote-unquote, Will Benson's career, that maybe he comes in after he retires and can work a little bit with Ellie. I think that's the only thing he's missing, man. Votto and Ellie.
Well, Votto's under contract with the Blue Jays right now. Though,
who gives a damn about the Blue Jays?
Can't do anything there.
We'll talk next year.
I think he's still in the IL as well, so that's also going to be a tough a tough go about it. But one thing about Ellie, and Trace has brought this up, I know it's so easy to just want to put the ball in play. It's a lot easier said than done, especially with a guy that has the game that Ellie De La Cruz has. I mean, Ellie De La Cruz hits 450 home runs. This isn't Billy Hamilton trying to you know, just tap the ball down the line. I mean, this is a guy that has immense power. So I think that's what does make it frustrating for a lot of fans, is that you see how much he can just wreak havoc on the game when he puts the ball in play. But that's also not just completely his game at the same time. So it has to be a balance, and you don't want him to go too far overboard where he's just so focused on putting the ball in play that what got him to this point, which is crushing baseballs, gets taken away from him. So it's a balance there. Most of the top hitters in baseball strike out like 20-25% of the time. It's not like it used to be where, you know, you had guys that your top hitters in the game were contact hitters. I mean, that's a big part of the game today. And it's a tough balance with Ellie, but he's just barely getting his feet wet in the big leagues. It was nice. It's nice the week that he had after our show last week, Chuck, where the vibes were as low as they could be on Ellie De La Cruz. It's completely flipped, and I think there'll be a lot of waves this year. It's not going to be just this nice upward trajectory that we would love. He'll have some more slumps. But I think at the end of the year, I think the biggest thing you want to see is you want to see progress out of him. You want to see at the end of the year his overall numbers just be progressing some. How much? We'd love to see a lot. But if he's just progressing some, that's a good sign for the future. All right, let's get you caught up on the Reds minor league action from Tuesday night. We'll start off with AAA. The Louisville Bats lost 13-4 to the Columbus Clippers. That is the Cleveland Guardians AAA affiliate. Tough night for Connor Phillips. He only threw 44 of his 78 pitches for strikes. He only went 3 2/3 inning, gave up 7 hits, 9 runs, 8 of them earned, walked 4 batters, struck out 3, and gave up 3 home runs. Blake Dunn was 0-4 with a strikeout. Mike Ford was 1-4, but did hit a homer. He's got 3 already this young season. Re-signs 1-3, struck out twice. Connor Capel, he hit another home run. He's already got 4 for the Bats. And then Tony Santion only went 2 1/3 innings. Yep, 2 hits, 1 unearned run, walked 1, and didn't strike anyone out. Double-A, the Chattanooga Lookouts, they were actually postponed. Their game against the Tennessee Lookouts, they were postponed by rain. They'll be back in action at 7:15 on Wednesday night. The Dayton Dragons, they won 7-3 on the road at Cedar Rapids. A lot of good performances in this one. Jay Allen, he homered again. Jay Allen already has 2 home runs on the season, matching his entire total from 2023. Last year played just 31 games. He dealt with a bunch of injuries, but great to see Jay Allen off to a great start for the Lookouts. Cam Collier, 2-5. Hector Rodriguez, 2-5 with a triple. And Carlos Jorge, he was 2-3. He homered. The only player to have a rough night was Sal Stewart. He was 0-4. And then last, the low A Daytona Tortugas, they lost 4-0 to Palm Beach. Not a whole lot going on in this one. The only positive, Ricardo Cabrera, he was actually on base 3 times, 1-2 with 2 walks. Alfredo Duno, he was 0-2 with a walk. All right, well, the Reds will be back in action 6:40 on Wednesday night against the Brewers, game 3 of this 4-game series. For the Reds, it'll be Hunter Green looking to build off a really strong start his last time out against the Mets when he only allowed 1 run over 6 innings, struck out 6 batters, only walked 1. Green does have a career 8.00 ERA against the Brewers, but he actually did not face the Brewers at all last year. Willie Adames has taken Green deep twice. Christian Yelich also has a homer against Green. For the Brewers, it'll be our old friend Wade Miley who'll be making his 2024 debut. Started the year on the IL. He had a shoulder injury. He only made one rehab start down with AAA. Only threw 55 pitches, went three innings. Miley has a 2.86 career ERA against the Reds. Last year, threw six shutout innings in his only appearance against the Reds. Active Reds, they are just 3-29 against Wade Miley. Luke Maley is the one who's faced him the most, and you actually would expect him to be in the lineup as he has caught Green both times so far this year. Luke Maley just 1-9. Steers 0-5. Jonathan India's 1-5. Ellie De La Cruz, however, is actually 1-3. All right, well, thanks so much for listening today to Chatterbox Reds. Appreciate all your support. Make sure you subscribe to Chatterbox Reds wherever you listen to this podcast. If you could leave us a 5-star review, really would appreciate that. I saw several have come through over the last couple of days. It means a lot to me. Helps us be able to grow the show and hopefully be able to even provide you with more content. But also, tell a friend. You know a Reds fan that loves the Cincinnati Reds? Tell them about Chatterbox Reds. They might like our little podcast that we do every day. Would appreciate that. Off the Bench, 10 a.m. to noon, Chatterbox Sports on YouTube. Trace and the gang will be back. They had a really cool experience as Chatterbox Sports broadcast the Joe Nuxall Classic at Prasco Park on Tuesday. Xavier and UC played game two, Wright State and Miami played the first game. So she'll talk about that really cool experience and catch you up on the world of sports, Reds talk, and more. So Off the Bench, Chatterbox Sports on YouTube from 10 to noon. And we also have the Kenner and Kev show. That is a simulcast of the radio show on 1410 Wing AM. That's ESPN Radio in Dayton. That is on 3 to 5 on Chatterbox Sports on YouTube. Be sure to check that out as well. I hope that you have a fantastic Wednesday. See you on Chatterbox Reds Live a little after 9 o'clock on YouTube. If you missed that, of course, we'll be here in your podcast feed on early Thursday morning. Go Reds!